Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. Good to have you back. If you're a newcomer, well, welcome. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the one and only Eric Henry of Horns247.com. And Eric, we always go full disclosure here. We're recording on Wednesday, February 21st. And we are a month out to spring football, which begins on March 19th. We will have some thoughts on that here in a second. We'll also talk some Texas basketball as we head into the home stretch of the regular season. But we did have significant breaking news since our last podcast. That would be the new contract for Steve Sarkisian, who we learned back on January 13th would be getting a four-year extension, thanks to a Regents meeting that is going on probably right now as we speak. The agenda for that meeting included details of Steve Sarkisian's contract, which will take his salary from $5.8 million he was scheduled to earn in 2024 to $10.3 million, putting him at number three among salaries for college football coaches behind Dabo Swinney at Clemson, who makes $10.88 million, and Kirby Smart of Georgia, who makes $10.7 million. Sarkisian's $10.3 million will put him just ahead of Ohio State's Ryan Day at $10.27 million. You know, Eric, the timing could not have been better for Steve Sarkisian with Nick Saban retiring when he did at Alabama, because Steve Sarkisian was a candidate for that Alabama job. That means leverage, but $10.3 million. The two coaches ahead of him have won national championships, and plural, they've each won two. Steve Sarkisian, the highest paid coach without a national championship. Your thoughts?
It's funny, Chip. Some of the conversation, and first off, always great to be back on the horn with you, talking a little Texas everything, like you mentioned here on a overcast Wednesday afternoon here in beautiful Austin, Texas, downtown Austin, Texas. But yeah, a lot of the conversation that I've seen online on social media is Steve Sarkisian becoming part of the $10 million club, a very distinguished group of coaches in that regard. And to your point, those are all coaches who have won national championships outside of Steve Sarkisian. The obvious question is he worth it, right? That is the question that I've seen speculated and bantered about. And guess what? I'm here to tell you, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, kids, when it comes to contract negotiation, listen, this is something that Chip has much more experience than I have, okay? Chip is a big money ball player. He's that high price free agent that you bring in. I don't have this type of experience. What I've been told.
We're both in journalism. I'll remind you, Eric.
What I've been told is that when it comes to negotiations, it's not necessarily a matter of what you're worth as much as what you can command and what the market says that you can command at that point in time. Chip, Steve Sarkisian's value to this program, again, you are much more equipped. And I'm not even talking about, you know, I'm joking aside from the money thing. I'm just talking about from your time covering Texas. You're much more equipped to talk about this than I am. But he is a legitimate national college football face of a program, someone who you can put out there and say, that's our guy. And now that the wins back up everything else that comes with it in terms of his pedigree, his history, having been under Nick Saban, having worked at SC, you know, having been in the NFL, Steve Sarkisian is absolutely worth that type of salary that he commands. So that is the big thing. I know we're going to go through some of the perks, some of the details of that contract here in a second, but just my initial instantaneous reaction is, yeah, he's worth every penny. What he has been, I mean, listen, I've been here now 7 months, but for the purposes of a football season, I've been here a year, right? And I know what the conversation was, not only here in Austin, but, you know, kind of just amongst the college football space as far as what Texas was. You go back prior to last year, and we know what it is now. It's taken a step forward. And again, you can even a major step forward. And you can speak about what it was, you know, 3 years ago to when he got the job and even coming off a 5-7, right? So all those things in totality, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that he is worth every penny.
Yeah, I think what the fact that he just has not made many sideways steps since the offseason following the 5-7 year, three straight top five recruiting classes, the best offensive line recruiting class in 2022. The analysts he's brought in from Gary Patterson, you know, to Joe DeCamillis and Paul Christ, Payam Sadat. He's got, he's, you know, clearly got, you know, the respect of other former head coaches. And more importantly, I think he's been transparent with his players to the point where he's not losing guys he doesn't want to lose to the transfer portal, which is a lot in this day and age. Because we know it, and it, look, it's good to be a have. Texas is a have. They have NIL dollars to bring in players like A.D. Mitchell and Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden and Andrew Makuba. But you've got to build a culture where your players become your best recruiters, and I think he's done that. And he delivered when he was supposed to deliver. He laid it out there preseason. We think we can win the Big 12. That's our goal. And they went out and won the Big 12 and reached the college football playoff. And so the momentum is squarely on his side. Now, we thought Texas had momentum in 2018 when Tom Herman took Texas to the Sugar Bowl and they beat Georgia. And then in 2019, it was another, you know, 8-4, 8-5 type season, or 8-9-4, sorry, type season. So you got to keep it going. And he came out on signing day. We talked about this a little bit last week, said he was borderline obsessed with winning a national championship. And that's music to fans' ears. I noticed in the, you know, winter conditioning workouts, the players are wearing t-shirts now that say obsessed. And that he's going to have that, because they took a lot of pride in building the five-star culture to go with their five-star talent this past season. Kind of voicing that the loudest after that Iowa State win in Ames. But you lose Bo Davis as your defensive line coach. You lose a bunch of, you know, 11 players are going to the NFL combine. That's a lot of talent that has to be replaced. So, but I think, and look, I think Texas has tried to be pragmatic about this. They didn't give him a 10-year extension. It's 7 years. Now it's $74.2 million, all guaranteed. But I think that tells you just how much the leadership of Texas believes in this guy as a person. Remember, they got rid of Tom Herman because they didn't like Tom Herman the person. His results on the field were okay. Tom Herman the person was not okay in their minds. They didn't think he was a leader of young men. So I think this was the right move, and it was not unexpected. I think Texas fans saw that and said, okay, all right, this makes sense. Here's the perks of being Steve Sarkisian, Eric. Two dealership cars, 20 hours of private aircraft use for personal use. UT Golf Club membership, 12 tickets to all home games, with the opportunity to purchase up to 20 tickets, the use of a suite for every home football game with the premium parking that goes with it, up to 8 tickets to away football games, and up to 6 tickets to all home sporting events for other Texas sports. How's that sound to you?
Let me ask you this, because I as you ran through it and as I'm taking a look here, I kind of asked myself, what is the most appealing perk, right? And, you know, could bring the listeners behind the curtain. We were kind of bantering, you know, 20 hours of private aircraft time for personal use. Seems like that would be the draw, but 20 hours, you know, it depends, right? That kind of leaves you domestically, in my mind, right? If you're gonna get the most out of those 20 hours, the two dealer cars, that sounds interesting. The one that I wanted, you know, your opinion on is the UT Golf Club membership. I mean, is that the best spot to play a couple rounds, play a couple holes in Austin?
It's a good spot.
Okay.
Good spot. Plus, you're probably gonna bump into Jordan Spieth every once in a while, Scotty Scheffler. So yeah, that's a good spot. That was, you talk about the ultimate kind of sweetheart deal. The two Texas boosters who made that happen, a guy named Bill Duvall and Mike Myers, owned all that property out there near Lake Austin. It's in Steiner Ranch, but it has a view of Lake Austin. And instead of, this is how much they love the university, instead of building high-end homes on that property and selling them for a fortune,
I can imagine,
they built the University of Texas Golf Club and gave the school the right to own it. Now, I don't know if this was the right move or not by Texas not to take that ownership, but prime real estate only available because they have two mega boosters who love the university. So yeah, UT Golf Club, that's a good membership. That's a good spot. Also, Steve Sarkisian's performance incentives go from $825,000 max to $1.85 million max. $300,000 for a conference championship, Eric. $250,000 for reaching the college football playoff. Remember, it goes to 12 teams, and they just approved a 5-7 format. We'll touch on that in a second. $500,000 for reaching the quarterfinal. $750,000 for reaching the semifinal. $1 million for reaching the championship game. $1.25 million for winning the national championship. Not bad.
I mean, those performance escalators, Chip, that, listen, you talk about the man being obsessed with winning a national championship, and I'm not saying that he was any less obsessed prior to this contract, but those escalators will give you reason to be even more obsessed, because I don't know, you know, we aren't privy to what is in, you know, other coaches' contracts, but I'd be willing to speculate that if he indeed does achieve the ultimate goal, probably looking at the highest paid coach in college football, at least for a 1 year period. And that is impressive, Chip.
All gas, no brakes, straight to the bank, baby. Yeah. And raises for the coordinators. So Pete Kwiatkowski goes from 1.7 million to 1.8 million. Kyle Flood got a year added on to his deal. He's scheduled to make $1.325 million this season. That salary goes up in the next couple of years. And then Jeff Banks is at 1.1 million and will go up, I think, 150,000 each year through the 26 season, 24, 25, 26. And I think we'll get the deals for the other assistants here soon, but that's what the regents are taking on during this meeting. Winter conditioning continues, Eric. As we said, we're counting down to spring football. And before we get to your preview of the quarterback room going into spring ball, Ethan Burke is a guy I'm hearing good things about, hearing that he's, you know, kind of reshaped, remaking his body. Has, you know, we know he has the great length, but in his first year as a starter, he leads the team in sacks. He had 5.5 sacks, second on the team with 9.5 tackles for loss. But he is the highest rated returning run defender for the Longhorns in 2024 after the departures of, you know, Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, Jalen Ford. So Ethan Burke, I think this guy has a high ceiling, and I think he's still kind of just getting his legs under him as a football player after being a highly recruited lacrosse player up until about his, you know, freshman, sophomore year in high school when football kind of became a passion. He said he ended up falling more in love with the physical nature of football, even more than the physical nature of lacrosse. His dad is a former professional lacrosse player who is the Westlake High School lacrosse coach. And I think Ethan Burke is a guy to watch. I mean, I think he's just kind of scratching the surface. How about you?
Chip, this always stood out to me about Ethan Burke when we'd see him, we'd get him for media availability. And, you know, again, bring the listeners behind the curtain, you know, the guys typically come in their own clothes and they'll change into a Texas polo and whatnot and get a chance to see.
Yeah, those guys aren't walking around campus in those burnt orange shirts.
It's true. And you can just see some of the guys. And, you know, Burke is someone who just kind of is gangly, the appropriate word, you know? I mean, listen, not that he is not lanky. Yeah, not that he is not a, you know, an impressive athlete, right? But this is a kid who looks, you know, long and not necessarily the most, I don't want to say the most physically built. I mean, he's an impressively sized kid, but he's not walking around like, for example, Chip, the flashback to last week's podcast, he ain't walking around like Byron Murphy, you know, cut up with a six pack at this point in his career, right? So to hear your report about Burke kind of progressing physically and reshaping his body, that's encouraging, because you talk about a kid who's legit, what, 6'6"-ish?
Yeah, 6'6". He's probably closer to 6'7".
6'7", right? So if you can get him
83-inch wingspan.
And with that type of length, he's a kid who I could easily see. Now, of course, it depends on, you know, how that affects him on game days, right, and in terms of athleticism. But if he can get up to 270, 275, I mean, I don't know necessarily – now, that would affect his quickness, but if he can maintain his ability at that playing weight, you're talking about a monster on the defensive line. And to transition to your second point in terms of the run defense, yeah, again, listen, now part of the Pro Football Focus thing is gets tricky, right? Because in grading, especially an edge player, right, especially when grading them against the run, some of that is fundamental football, right? How much do they seal off, you know, their area and kind of force guys inside, right? So you're sure part of that grade is, you know, making sure you're forcing guys inside to Sweat, Murphy, and others. But just in terms of sheer ability as a run defender, right? If he can package that with his overall game, that's huge. And especially given the losses in the middle, right? If you can get progression from he and Baron Sorrell, just even if it's not necessarily, you know, bull rushing a left tackle or a right tackle and making a play on the run, if it's incrementally progressing at those fundamental things that you ask your defensive ends and your edge players to do in the run and run support, that's huge. But yeah, I mean, physically speaking, if he can take that next step and be a game wrecker, I mean, it's look out.
Yeah. And I think Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke probably don't get the credit I mean, obviously, T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy were the heart and soul of that run defense that was ranked number 3 in FBS, giving up only 82.4 yards per game. But you knew because of their presence inside that runs were going to be forced outside. And Sorrell and Burke did a much better job in 2023 of setting the edge and containing teams' running games than we saw in 2022 when Oviagofu was at one of those ends and Baron Sorrell was at the other. And that they, you know, that's a big reason why they were the starters. Now, on, you know, in passing situations, you might see Burke come off the field, Anthony Hill move up, depending on what Colin Simmons can do as an early enrollee who his mom says he's already put on 20 pounds, which is good because if he wants to be an every down player, he is going to have to take on those tackles and set the edge in the run and be able to shed and make the play. So otherwise he'll be a situational guy, which is not bad either. So it will be fun to watch in the spring because that's kind of a loaded, there's depth there. I mean, when you talk about guys like Justice Finkley and Jamon Tapp, and now you bring in Colin Simmons. So let's see who steps up and, you know, do they continue with a 4-man line? Do they change things up? You know, we'll have to see. They had, it's been a strength of Texas, the interior guys. And I think they still have enough interior guys where they would be a 4-man line, but it's gonna be fun to watch. And it's gonna be fun to watch the development of both Sorrell and Burke, because they, you know, Burke had big plays and big games, which is what you like. You know, two tackles for loss against Alabama, a fourth quarter sack against Alabama, the two sacks against K-State, including the strip sack that led to a Texas touchdown in a game that went into overtime and Texas won 33-30. He had a sack in the Houston game. That was a one possession game. Sack in the TCU game. You know, it wasn't like he piled up sacks against Rice and Wyoming. He did it in the big game. He had a half tackle for loss against Washington in the college football playoffs. So that's what you want. Like, you know, I look at Trey Moore. Trey Moore comes in from UTSA, but Trey Moore didn't, you know, all those sacks, he didn't have any against Tennessee, didn't have any against Texas. He had a lot against some of the lower teams in UTSA's conference. So and Trey Moore is another guy coming in who, you know, there's expectations for. So I think it's going to be interesting. And I like the fact that Ethan Burke watches Max Crosby film with the Las Vegas Raiders, because they kind of look alike. Like, they're both gingers. They're both really lanky, like you said. And Max Crosby, to me, he was the defensive player of the year in the NFL last year. So, all right, let's move on. We mentioned quarterback. We got to get to the quarterback. Eric has written part of a series position inventory we're doing over at Horns 24/7. Eric, tell us about the Texas quarterback room heading into spring football.
I mentioned it in the piece. I think if I were a Texas fan, this is probably the most confident you have to feel in this room in a long time. I mean, going back to Sam Ehlinger, and in terms of the depth, I said arguably, but if I really, you know, you held my feet to the fire and I had to make the case for it, I could say this is the most talented quarterback room in the nation. Here are some of the highlights. And again, you go out and check it out, horns247.com. You know, it's a free read. You know, we're trying to throw a couple freebies out there, let the folks get a feel for what we're doing over at horns247.com. But here are some of the highlights in my mind. Chip, one, this has to be in terms of the both short-term outlook and long-term outlook for the position, the best case scenario for Steve Sarkisian. You rewind this time last year, you're going to back into a quarterback room in which Quinn Ewers is looking to lock down the quarterback job, fighting against Malik Murphy and an incoming Arch Manning. He did just that, which obviously kind of propelled him into the season he had last year. Now entering year three, playing for Steve Sarkisian, there's no reason in my mind to believe you're going to get anything other than a player who's going to continue to progress and take the next step and really go from, and I think, Chip, you'd be equipped to speak to this, you know, this offense, it was clear that for anything you want to nitpick with Quinn as far as, you know, maybe not getting the most out of the deep ball, right, with guys like AD and Xavier Worthy and others, the overall efficiency of this offense ran best when Quinn Ewers was getting the ball out of his hands, doing the things they need to do as far as keeping the offense moving, right? Getting the ball to the hands of your playmakers. And when you talk about it, I almost hate it, Chip, because in this the football environment we're in right now, it feels like we kind of have this dichotomy, right? We talk about quarterbacks either as game changers or game managers, right? And then the way we talk about Quinn, inherently you say, all right, if he's not completing the deep ball to high clip, somehow that makes him a game manager. No, like game manager is delivering the 15-yard strike. And having, you know, being in sync with your receivers and taking the plays that are there, that Brock Purdy, you could say, is a game changer by based on just doing those things in itself. Game manager, in my mind, is someone you say, hey, just don't lose it for us. Quinn Ewers is someone who goes out and, as shown by his performance in the Alabama game, in the Iowa State game, his best performances came against top tier competition, someone you can go win the game with. But anyhow, I digress. Into the short-term outlook, Quinn, obviously, that was the best-case scenario. So now what that's done is that buys Arch Manning, someone who clearly, as he stated, when the media contingency, and contingency is probably an understatement, that he had at the Sugar Bowl.
Media mob.
Mob, yeah, probably a better phrase. He's content being in Austin as a college kid, playing for the Longhorns, having another year of development in playing for Steve Sarkisian, right? He's happy as could be. He is not someone who's, you know, pining for the transfer portal. So you combine those two things together, Chip, that means the long-term outlook for this position. You've got it solidified in my mind. You got to think at least for another 3 years, if not more, because, you know, you're going to get Quinn Ewers, and should he depart for the NFL after this, then you get at least, you know, in my mind, you think 2 years of Arch Manning in this position. That type of long-term stability and solidifying of the position, Chip, not only allows you to build around that position, but when you go in recruiting, in the transfer portal, you don't have to say, I mean, Chip, how many teams around the nation, we've seen it, you know, sometimes teams bring in two and even three quarterbacks in a cycle, right? In an effort to find one guy that they can depend on. If Texas doesn't have to do that, that just gives them the room to just bolster this roster in many ways. So those are some of the highlights. Again, go out and check it out. You know, we get into Trey Owens as well. And overall, you know, quarterback room, again, Texas had the luxury of getting guys like Charles Wright as a preferred walk-on who have, you know, some lineage and ties to the program. We're three-star guys, 24/7 three-star guys. That just only helps with the depth as well. They have another one, of course, in Cole Lord, who is a preferred walk-on. His, I believe his grandfather, if memory serves me correct, was a Longhorn. So, you know, another three-star guy who you know, could be like Charles Wright and go get a scholarship at App State if he wanted to, but, you know, it's here at Texas. So go check it out. Be part of a series. We're going to do that for every position on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have the quarterback. You got to have the quarterback. I mean, for Texas, you look at their national championships with Vince Young and Colt McCoy, two guys whose names are up in the stadium. Quinn Ewers, it was really important to him to win a Big 12 championship. I wrote about that extensively in the Insider last year. He doesn't say a lot, but he's got a lot. You know, we compared him to an iceberg. You see a little bit on the surface, but there's a whole lot underneath with Quinn Ewers. And it was important for him to win a Big 12 championship and for him to come back. And obviously he trusted Steve Sarkisian that he was going to bring in a room full of receivers, which he has. Matthew Golden from Houston, Isaiah Bond from Alabama, Silas Bolden, who will be here in the summer from Oregon State, in addition to Jonte Cook and DeAndre Moore and Ryan Niblett, who return. Amari Nyblack coming in from Alabama at tight end, a stretch the field guy, similar to JT Sanders. You know, Quinn Ewers is now leading this team. When he got here from Ohio State, he was trying to get to know his teammates. Now he's running the show and he's comfortable with it. He knows that the NFL is a business. I think that's why he said you know what? I'm going to take my time here and get everything I can out of my college experience. And then when I'm ready, not when everyone says I'm ready, I'm going to go to the NFL. And I've been really impressed with Quinn Ewers. I mean, I know he came in with the mullet and took some pictures with fancy cars when he got here. But to take on the challenge that he did last year of, you know, not only remaking his body and cutting his hair and his beard and all that, but he apologized basically to Texas fans during the spring saying, you know, I let you down in 2022. And I mean, he didn't have to say that. That's a guy who is self-aware, who's accountable. Arch Manning, everyone can't wait. You know, they couldn't wait when he came in for garbage time and what, completed one pass and ran around. Eric, it was the loudest ovation.
Really quick, you know what was funny? It was funny as I was writing that up, right? You know, I'm inserting the stats for both guys. And I was like, man, wait a minute. Arch only threw five passes? Because in my head, after everything we went through, I was like, and I'm like, nah, but he had that run, right? Because we heard about Arch hitting 20 miles. Yeah, he had that. Wait, hold on. He only ran once for 7 yards. Like, it just in your head, it seems like more.
You know, it's like John Henry. It's like, what? What? I thought it was so much bigger than that, you know? But it is. It's crazy. The hype and hysteria that comes with the Manning name. But that's another thing about Quinn that I like. He handled that. He handled that. He went out, did his thing all year, was happy when Arch got in. Never had this, oh, I'm looking over my shoulder. You know, Quinn has a lot of self-belief. And I think Arch Manning is benefiting from that. And I agree. I think it's an absolutely loaded quarterback room. You know, Oregon brought in Dylan Gabriel and the quarterback from UCLA. I'm hearing it's going to be Dylan Gabriel this year and then they'll hand it off, but it's nice to have depth. You know, Arch Manning is now one play away, and I think Texas fans will blindly feel good about that, even though what Arch completed
two passes.
And ran around a little bit last year. So, and Trey Owens, I mentioned this in the Insider, you know, he's come in with a really strong, competitive mindset. You know, he's just doing his thing. And that's what you would expect of a quarterback coming in to Texas. He's not in awe of Arch. He's not in awe of Quinn. He's competing. And that's what you need. And so, you know, Trey Owens joins that room, and it's going to be fun to watch how these guys progress, because look, all the love that Texas is getting as they head into the SEC, people are talking about, you know, every, you know, we just got that college football playoff format, the 5-7 format. Every projection I've seen has Texas in the playoff next year. So, but I think that's how Quinn Ewers wants it. That's what Quinn Ewers expects. So, yeah, exciting times for Texas fans. Savor this, because you've had some great quarterback rooms in the past. You know, Vince Young and Colt McCoy were in the room together. Shane Buechele and Sam Ellinger were in the room together. So, this is taking it up a notch, and really exciting times. Texas football. All right, Eric, we've got Texas basketball. You know, it wasn't a win over a top 10 team. It was a win they had to get against Kansas State. Kansas State came in with a very similar record to Texas, same record in conference play. And K-State has, you know, wins over Kansas and Baylor. But they also have a net ranking of 81. Texas has a net ranking of 33. The net rankings are something the Tournament Selection Committee looks at. So Texas could not afford to lose to K-State. It wasn't pretty. It was a grinded out 62-56 win against a K-State team that just isn't they don't seem very connected, Eric. And they sure made some questionable plays down the stretch, including the flagrant foul on Kendall Weaver, right as the game was, you know, within striking distance for K-State. But Texas at home, which has been a weird place for them this year. At one point, they were 1-4 in home games in Big 12 play. They get it done. Dylan Dazoo leads the way.
Yeah, Chip, real quick before I get to Texas, I just want to piggyback off your point on Kansas State. Chip, I talk about, you know, their disconnection, but post-game, you know, obviously they're a team that's fighting for NCAA tournament life and they're trying to get in. Chip, their players they brought post-game, forgive me, I'm forgetting which who they brought, but you could sense the frustration, almost a point of tears, when Jerome Tang mentioned, we're just trying to find ways to win, and it's frustrating that we're not getting wins. I mean, so that just stood out to me, is that clearly, like, that's a team that's just very much pressing, and you almost feel for those kids, just these just despondent looks on their faces post-game. But Kansas State's misfortune are the Horns' fortunes, right? So to talk about it, I mean, I guess the really standout things, Dylan Dazoo leads the team in scoring for the four straight game, 20 points. As you talk about, nothing came easy for both teams. And I would love to sit here and tell you this was great defense, but, you know, Texas made defensive plays when it mattered, and Kansas State showed some stretches of good defense. This was a matter of both teams just weren't hitting shots, especially in the first half. Both teams shot under 35% from the field. I think for the game, both teams shot under 20% from three. And this was a matter of who was going to make enough plays at the end. Again, you know, getting Dylan Dazoo's offensive production and, you know, at the free throw line, it looked like when the game possibly could slip away, Dylan Mitchell misses two. Kendall Weaver misses two. Four straight free throws for the Horns that really would have iced the game with under 90 seconds left. They missed those stretch. And then, you know, Kansas State isn't able to you know, capitalize on that. Arthur Kaluma misses a layup. So they get Dylan Dazoo on the line, and the veteran, the guy who Chip post-game said, listen, we're treating every game like it's an NCAA tournament game. We're looking at it like it's a knockout. If we lose, we're knocked out, right? It's on the veteran who steps up, knocks down two free throws, and gets them the win. So really will be interesting, as you know, kind of you said, I'll you know, emphasize your point. Yeah, this was a game they couldn't lose, right? You take a look at the KenPom standings that has Texas projected to finish at 19-12, 8-10 in conference play. The wins they have them getting are against Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. They have, against Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. They have them losing to Texas Tech, Kansas State, and Baylor, right? So that gets them to 8-10. And like I've said, and we'll talk about it, you know, the later part of this podcast, and take it or leave it, but just recent history, Iowa State 2021, Mississippi State 2022. More specific, I mean, the Mississippi State example, when you get drubbed by 39 points in your opening round of your conference tournament, and you're a 7-10 team in conference play, and you still make the tournament, that goes to show that whatever league that the selection committee deems to be the best league in college basketball, if you're an 8-9 team league, being sub 500 isn't necessarily going to knock you, right? Even Jerome Tang said post-game that he believes this is a 9 team league as well. So we'll see where that takes the Longhorns. They head to Kansas, and Chip, this isn't a Kansas team that's, you know, world beaters, number one. They've lost to UCF and shown moments of being beatable. So we will see, you know, again, is it going to take a much better shooting performance than the Horns had the other night? Absolutely. But if they can rally into one of those games like they had the second half against Houston, you know, the first matchup or the Baylor game, right? And really, and this is a team that's played well on the road. You give them that, right? So if they can kind of just muster together one of those games where they reached kind of the highest potential of what you think this team could be, maybe they pull off a win. But even if they don't, I really look at, again, the Texas Tech game, the Oklahoma State game, in Oklahoma being key. They can get those, and then even a win in the Big 12 tournament, they're in. And maybe if they can do all those things, that takes them from being, you know, a 10-11 seed, maybe a 9 or 8, if that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, look, life is tough. Once you get down in the 8, 9, 10, 11, it's tough, because even if you win the 8, 9, you're facing a 1. But let's be honest, and you wrote about this, they need other players to step up. It's been all Dylan Dazoo and Max Asemus with some Kendall Weaver energy and defense thrown in, but Tyrese Hunter, Dylan Mitchell, it's up one game, down the next, and you kind of don't know what you're going to get. There was a wide open three for Tyrese Hunter in that Kansas State game where they swung the ball beautifully. He was all alone on the left side of the arc and missed. And, you know, he came alive in the NCAA tournament last year, had some huge threes against Xavier, the game that Dylan Dazoo went out of with the foot injury. Actually, he suffered that foot injury in practice. He tried to play for 2 minutes against Xavier, couldn't get up and down the floor. But, you know, Tyrese Hunter's capable. He was capable for Iowa State. So you keep hoping, thinking that his confidence will come in full bloom. I loved his fight. He played great defense in the K-State game. You know, he and Asimus did a pretty good job on Carter and Pryor or Medea, Tyler Perry, you know, and the intensity's there. Hell, he stood up for Kendall Weaver. It looked like, you know, Tyrese Hunter was ready to throw blows after that flagrant foul. You like that. He's a tough kid, and you just want to see him reach his potential because we've seen it. We know what he's capable of. So Dylan Mitchell, it's like wide open 10 footer, wide open 12 footer. They leave him alone. They want him to shoot. And this is a guy who hit 22 balls out of 25 out of the rack at the combine last summer. I don't get it. He had a turnaround baseline jumper in that orange white game that I was like, oh, okay. All right. Dylan Mitchell's, and he's got that little hook shot. Again, it's like, just keep adding. Don't go back. It's like walking in the sand, you know, one step forward, we lose a half a step. And they really desperately need those guys. Brock Cunningham, you know, when he comes in to give him a little boost. IT Horton played well in this game against Kansas State. IT Horton.
Chip, the two threes, I'm getting Luffy back, but the two threes that IT Horton hit like in that game, the most points he's had since he scored 20 against UCF.
Well, and Eric, I've noticed about IT Horton, that's when you want him. You want him mid-game. You want him because his shot does not get better at crunch time. So when he started missing threes, RT took him out, and Kendall Weaver came back in for the defense in the final 4 minutes. That got them against Central Florida. Because if you go back and look, IT Horton's started missing shots down the stretch, and they might have been able to hang on to that 16-point lead if they had brought Kendall Weaver in to, you know, play some D. Now, they all got to work on their free throw shooting because that's going to get them. I mean, that's going to get them. So, interesting game. And as you mentioned, they go to Kansas this Saturday. Kansas has been unbelievable at home and vulnerable on the road because they're not very deep. They're not very deep at all. It seems like Bill Self's trusting about six, maybe seven players. RT, Rodney Terry's trusting eight players. I mean, this is going to be a battle of attrition. But big game for Texas. And then they will turn right around and play Baylor on Monday. Is that right? Are we already to that?
No, I think it's Texas Tech after
Texas Tech.
Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay, Texas Tech on Tuesday. And good heavens, we know Lubbock. Have those people gotten over Chris Beard yet? Like Chris Beard, do they know he's at Ole Miss now? Because Eric, when I went out there for the Beard reunion, I thought the whole city was going to come apart. It felt like the whole city was surrounding the Texas team bus. And then they all couldn't wait to get into Supermarkets Arena or whatever they call that place and throw F-bombs at Chris Beard. I mean, it was F-U Beard. I mean, like 20,000 people yelling it. So,
woo! I'll be making the trip out to Lubbock, so we shall see how the Red Raiders want to send off the Longhorns in the final Big 12 matchup. So,
yeah, that was intense, to say the least. All right, Texas women's hoops, real quick before we get to take it or leave it. Texas women's hoops, they've won six in a row. They're playing Texas Tech tonight, but But Eric, wow, what a, you know, credit to Vic Schaefer, credit to Madison Booker, credit to this whole team for sticking together, remaking themselves after losing Rory Harmon to the season-ending knee injury on December 27th. You know, I was looking back at it when they beat UConn and ascended to number five in early December. Rory Harmon had 27 points, 13 assists in that game, five rebounds, and you in a steal, and you realize, gosh, he really was that good. You know, she goes down. Vic Schaefer yesterday likened it to his team having a major heart attack and needing quadruple bypass. And now they've had quadruple bypass with Madison Booker settling in, now leading the team in scoring, 15.9 points, but she's averaging 20 over, you know, the last four games. And she is so comfortable just with that pull-up jumper. What a talent. I mean, everybody's talking about her as a freshman All-American. And then you've got good post players and Taylor Jones and Aaliyah Moore. And now Deanna Gaston is getting back after the ankle injury. And if they can get Shaylee Gonzalez to hit her, you know, get that stroke back, she's got such a, you know, great outside shot. It's been up and down. She did have a good game in their last win. Maybe she's snapped out of it because she was in a six game rut there, but this team's starting to put it together. They play Texas Tech. They've got Central Florida, your Central Florida Knights on the road. And then the rematch with the Oklahoma Sooners, who, it's so weird, Eric. They've been in first place in the Big 12 seemingly all year, and they're only number 23 in the rankings. Kind of weird, but, you know, Oklahoma, that's the game that the Texas players are going to want for sure, because that was the game they lost at home, and Vic Schaefer woke them up at, you know, before sunrise and had them practicing their brains out the next morning. And that was the last game they've lost. So what a turnaround. And now they're projected as a two seed, Eric, behind number one, South Carolina, number two, Ohio State, number three, Stanford, and number four, Iowa, with, of course, Caitlin Clark. So hold on to your seats, kids. That Texas women's basketball team is worth the price of admission. Eric, you ready for some take it or leave it?
No doubt about it, Chip. I am ready for some take it or leave it.
All right, let's do it. We'll be right back here on the Flagship Podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
And if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on into some take it or leave it, Eric. All right, I'm going first here. The position you have the biggest question mark heading into spring football is receiver. Take it or leave it.
Oh, man, this one was, it was tough because I wanted to go with receiver, but listen, and I wrote about this in the offseason about a month and a half ago. The reason I'm leaving it, Chip, and the reason I'm going with defensive tackle, we've talked about it a bit on this podcast, just the level of play of Sweat and Murphy. It's not that we don't expect that AC, Vernon Broughton, Tia Savea, you know, the young guys, Bledsoe, Sadira Mitchell, Zach Swanson, Aaron Bryant. It's not that we think those guys won't be good, right? But we just can't take for granted. It would not be overkill, Chip, if I made this point every week until the opening week of the season, how good Sweat and Murphy were. Can those guys, at least as a whole collective, reach some measure of that play? Not as one guy, not as two guys, but as a whole room. That, to me, is the biggest question mark. With receiver, I talked about writing about this early in the offseason. I love the positionless aspect of getting Matthew Golden, Isaiah Bond, Silas Golden, the way they all can be Bolden. See, I told you, it's a mental block, man. I've got to get that fixed before the season starts. Nevertheless, the way that those guys could be moved around the offense in terms of different positions, slot, outside, etc. I'm really high on this receiver room, and that's not even getting into Chante Cook and Niblett and those guys as well. So I'm leaving it, Chip. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to leave it as well. I'm with you on the defensive tackle position because it Steve Sarkisian said it himself. I was listening back to his press conference on the February signing period, and he said, how many times do you get a tackle tandem like Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy? And if you're Georgia, you get it. You know, you had it for two straight national championship seasons, but it is rare. And look, I will contend, yeah, the quarterback position is important, but it's not as important as having the two difference-making interior defensive linemen. You got to have those guys to be able to make teams one-dimensional on offense. And huge opportunity for Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton, but we haven't seen the level of domination that we saw with Sweat and Murphy. So it's a tall task. There are players there. My second choice probably would be safety, just to see. You know, we mentioned last week that Andrew Mukuba has only recently gotten into the winter conditioning. So that chemistry in the secondary, because the communication has to be so good. You and I were there when, you know, Jahdae Barron was talking about how, you know, he would talk to Jaron Thompson and say, hey, be looking for this. And then Thompson would say, hey, make sure you tell Taff and, you know, Keaton Crawford and Derek Williams the same thing. And Barron's like, oh yeah, I got to communicate with four guys. They need to get that cohesion together. And I think Mukuba is a really good cover safety, which helps. I don't think he's afraid to throw his body around. Derek Williams is coming. Michael Taff is solid. Coaches trust him. And then, you know, we'll see how a guy like Xavier Filsimi, who I continue to hear good things about in winter conditioning, that he's all business and is is about that life. So let's see what they've got. But that was a vulnerable spot for Texas last year. Teams went after the safety position. Okay. Take it or leave it. Number two.
All right. Updated, because we probably will ask this question each week up until the regular season. As of now, you think Texas men's, of course, makes the NCAA tournament. CB, take it or leave it.
Yeah, this has become a running joke here on the show. But the good news is that I still think Texas is, as of now, I think they'll make the NCAA tournament. Now, they got to take care of business. They got to win on their home floor. They got to win against Oklahoma State. Don't spit the bit on that. And then they got to beat OU in Austin. If they do those two things, I think they're in. If they steal one of the road games against Tech, Baylor, Kansas, man, then we're the Jeffersons. We're moving on up. So, but as of right now, Eric, I'm going to take this. How about you?
I'm still taking it. As much as I want to buy the idea that Texas can steal a road game, most specifically that Texas Tech game that I'll be out in Lubbock, still can't feel wholly confident in that. But even if they don't, like I said, I still think you get to 8-10 in conference, and you just take a look at recent history of these teams. Whatever league is considered the strongest league in college basketball, at least going to get 8-9 teams in. I think Texas has shown enough in my mind. Should all those things come together, the Texas will have shown enough and they make the NCAA tournament. But again, visit us next week and we'll see what we have to say after that.
It's a week-to-week proposition with this year's Texas basketball team. All right, take it or leave it, number three.
The women.
Am I throwing to you?
No, sorry. I jumped the gun. That's all.
Okay. For it. So, Eric, Texas women's basketball, we mentioned, despite losing Rory Harmon, they've won six in a row going into this game against Texas Tech tonight. They're 24-3. They have reclaimed their season high ranking of number five. The Texas women's basketball team, they're Final Four contenders. Take it or leave it.
I am taking it, Chip. One player who we didn't mention in our earlier rundown of the women is Shea Holly, who, you know, Vic Schaefer and company, this can't be raved more enough, you know, highly enough about her impact on this team and kind of the intangible she brings. And this has been, Chip, in my mind, you talked about it, the way they've rallied around Rory Harmon's injury and been able to come together and regain their number five ranking. Listen, and then this is the biggest thing in my mind. I'm definitely curious to get your take on how you feel about this. South Carolina has definitely become the new UConn, you know, in women's basketball, but I'm going to make 2 points in one. A, any year that you don't have that UConn-like team that seems so unbeatable, the field is wide open. And B, I take a look at South Carolina, Dawn Staley's club. Now, listen, you got to love Dawn. I love everything about Dawn Staley as a coach, but they've been pushed twice. Georgia pushed them. Now, granted, the final score of those games ended up being double-digit wins. They were pushed against Georgia. I believe they were pushed, I'm forgetting who the opponent was prior, who Tennessee. Tennessee had them upset and minded as well. So they're not unbeatable, you know. Certainly, are they the top team in the nation? Yes. But this is not that UConn unbeatable, you know, like team. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I'm really optimistic about Vic Schaefer's club being Final Four contenders.
Yeah. Yeah, South Carolina, Camilla Cardoso. If you have not seen her play, 6'7" and skilled, I mean, you know, 14 points, 10 rebounds per game. She'll remind Big 12 fans of Ioka Lee at Kansas State. When you have that skilled 6'7" player in the women's game, you've got an advantage. But Texas with Taylor Jones, Aaliyah Moore, Deanna Gaston. Deanna Gaston is a key for this team. She has got to get back to being that athletic, you know, make plays around the basket, steal possessions player for Texas because she's the most athletic of the bigs outside of Amina Mohammed, who I love Amina's game. I just wish she would be a little more patient around the rim. She rushes her shots a little bit, but this team seems to believe, and they still have work to do. There's no question, but I'm gonna take this as well, Eric, because Vic Schaefer in the NCAA tournament, I know they had the hiccup at home last year against Louisville, but you know, Elite Eight his first 2 years. The first year was with a team that was a six seed, so I never count out Vic Schaefer. So I will take this as well, and we will not ever take our audience for granted. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the Flagship Podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. And if you're listening to us on some other platform, please feel free to give us a 5-star rating and a review, positive review. It'd be nice. We'd appreciate it. Make us a favorite so that you don't ever miss an episode of the Flagship Podcast. For Eric Henry, I am Chip Brown. Until next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com. Stay safe and keep the faith.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.